little thing called murder.
Hello, guys.
Hello, and welcome to A Little Thing Called Murder.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Jaden. We hope you are having a great day today.
Yeah, I hope. Yeah. Today, we've been having, like, super, like, random thunderstorms. Like, it goes from, like, super light out to, like, super dark. And then, like, downpours, like, Florida weather.
Yes.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, it's it's totally done.
But, yeah, so I went to get my glasses. I left right from work. And it wasn't raining. It kind of was, like, cloudy-ish sky. But then I get there, and it's, like, fucking pouring rain. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then, ooh, also. So my parents got me a few suit dresses to wear to work for my birthday.
Which I love that for you.
Oh, I know, me too. If you ever need suit dresses, fucking Calvin Klein all the way. They're fucking amazing. But anyway,
I have a blazer that's Calvin Klein. I love it. And it's such good, like, quality.
Yes, I fucking love. Like, that's, like, my favorite brand of, like, suits and everything. That's all I do. But, so, I was, like, at work, and I'm, like, why can I barely walk in it? I'm, like, maybe this dress is just, like, really tight on the legs or something. Because, like, I even, like, looked in the mirror. I'm, like, I don't know why. So, then I was, like, getting out of the car to, like, sprint in to get my glasses. And I feel the dress, like, rip. And I'm, like... So I'm like, yeah, I have to go into this place full of fucking people, and I just rip my dress. But then I was like, wait, Jaden, you're a fucking idiot. So in the back of, like skirts and suit dresses and stuff, they, like, sew that back flap together. But you're supposed to snip the strings.
Oh.
So it was just the strings, like, ripping to, like, make the flap loose. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm a fucking idiot. Because I couldn't tell. And then I texted Caitlin, and I was like, yo, remember how I said my dress was really tight? I'm just a fucking idiot. And she was like, oh, yo, I couldn't even tell. But I was like, yep, that was it. I was like, this is a lot easier to walk in now.
I feel like that happens to everyone at some point, though. So it's not like you're stupid.
Right. And the string was the same color as the dress, so you really couldn't tell. I didn't even know there was a fucking flap there. But yeah, so I got new glasses. They're really fucking strong. Like, I put them on, and she was like, oh, yeah, just your eyes are probably tired from working. Just, like, try them. Like, give it a week and, like, gradually, like, work up to them. But I've never had to put, like, train my eyes to wear a new pair of glasses. So I'm
I had to do that with the ones I got, because I don't have, like, a prescription per se. Like, I technically have 20/20 vision, but when I got a concussion back in high school, it messed up the alignment in my eyes. So, like, when I get tired or I, like, focus for long periods of time, the alignment shifts, so then I see, like, double everything.
Huh, interesting. Never heard of that.
Yeah, me either, but they were like, you're going to have to deal with that forever. So I was like, great. Yeah. But when I got my glasses, it took me a couple days to get used to it, even though there was no... I mean, I guess there is a prescription to kind of like fix that. I don't know how glasses work, but yeah.
But that was another thing, because she was, like, telling me about my prescription, and she was like, yeah, and these glasses now have the thing to correct your astigmatism, and I don't have astigmatism. So, like, did they put the wrong lenses in my glasses?
I would call them.
Like, I don't have astigmatatism. So, I don't know.
I would give them a call and be like, hey, so you guys said this, but, like, I don't have one.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, whatever. We apologize in advance. We are so tired.
And I don't even have, like, a reason to be. Jaden had, like, the weekend of her life, the past week of her life. Like, this is really, like, essentially the only time that we've been able to record, and it's Monday, which is why this episode's coming up a day late.
Yeah.
But delayed flights, is the reason.
Because, Baby DA School was really good. They had nice open bars, like, at the end of every day. So, that was nice.
I love that.
And then, so then on Thursday, I flew to Colorado. Fucking love Colorado. Why do I live in Pennsylvania?
I've never been, and I've always wanted to be.
Dude, you have to go. Like, I fucking love it. Like, it's, I think it's my, like, one of my favorite states. But yeah, so my cousin's wedding was amazing. I got to see my cousin. She's 8 now. And my other cousin, who's 10, and I fucking love them so much. They're going to be in my wedding. And, I just got to hang out with them. Like, the girl, River, like, she was my dancing partner. Oh, I love that name. I know, right? It's Remy is the boy and River is the girl. And I love them so much.
That is so cute.
But, yeah, they were, like, my dance partners at the wedding. And, oh, my God, it was so fun. But, yeah, so then I was supposed to fly out and get to Pittsburgh at, like, 9.
You said, like, 8:45, yeah.
Yeah, and then the plane got, first of all, it arrived late to Denver. And then they were like, oh, there's, like, mechanical issues, so we have to fix it. Which I found out after was just, like, the air conditioning was broken and something like that. They were fixing it. Mm. Oh, my God. But guess what? We're almost to Pittsburgh, okay? Full circle here talking about the storms, okay? I'm, like, looking out. I can see lightning in the clouds. We fly through a cloud. There's literally, like, lightning, like, right there.
I would have had so much anxiety.
You have no idea. I'm, like, sitting there, like, fuck, and, like, pulling the Schitt's Creek. To whom it may concern, please let me survive this. But
oh, my God.
It was kind of terrifying. But we made it, obviously. I'm here recording.
Yes, but, and I'm super happy you made it.
I know.
But I feel like pilots know how to navigate storms because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
I would still be so anxious.
Yeah, it was real terrifying. But is there anything else we want to talk about? Do we just get into it?
We can just get into it. So just for everyone listening knows, we're gonna start doing things a little different because, you know, like, summertime, everyone gets busy, and we're still putting out every week. However, we're switching to, we each do a case on an episode. So you're getting one case an episode just to kind of lighten up the load work for us. Because, like, this is fun for us and we want to keep having fun, you know?
And I think this gives us a chance to do some of the bigger, like, heavy hitters and stuff like that. Because we have more time to research them and stuff like that, because obviously we're busy with work and everything,
right?
So yeah,
right.
And we're still gonna have guests and our bloody alphabet, and so that'll still be a,
all of that will still stay the same, but just so everyone knows.
Yeah,
but I've got a case for you guys.
Okay, I am ready.
Go on. All right, so we are going to be talking about Sean Sellers. Do you know him?
I don't think so.
All right, well, you're about to. So I got all of my information from the imminent execution of Sean Sellers. I mean, there's a spoiler in the title, but from amnesty.org. And then I also watched My Saving Grace, the person that I hail to, Bailey Sarian, her video, When Satan Comes to Town.
Okay.
All right. So we are going to do some background on Mr. Sellers.
Okay.
So Sean was born in California on May 18th, 1969, to a 16-year-old mother.
Nice.
And what's that?
You said 1969, so I said nice.
Okay, middle school boy.
Well, no, that's like I don't know where it started, but like Tyler or Landon. I know, I think it's a thing when they say 69, you say nice. And, like, anytime, like, we see it, I'll, like, send it to Tyler and Landon, and I'm like, nice. And they do the same thing. But anyway, continue.
Oh, I've never heard of that, but nice. So, he was born to a 16-year-old mother and an unstable alcoholic father.
Nice.
Who were divorced when Sean was 3 or 4 years old. His mother, Vonda, then married a truck driver named Paul Bellofado, but went by Lee for some reason. Sean would frequently be left with relatives while his mother and stepfather drove across the country. The couple would end up taking Sean, who was 8 at the time, to Los Angeles and live with them. So, like, prior to that, like, they would come back and visit, but for the most part, like, they were out having their good old fun time.
Living their best life.
Right? So, by the time Sean was 16, he had moved around 30 times. And I know. And had became a boy who preferred isolation rather than constantly leaving friends that he had made. Which, can you blame him?
Yeah.
So, he was an intelligent child. He performed well at school, but became more and more emotionally disturbed and detached from reality as time went on. Although reportedly close to his mother and stepfather, from an early age, Sean was exposed to violence and humiliation within the family setting. He has said that he suffered beatings at the hands of his mother as well as his grandfather when he lived with him. And then also he lived with an uncle for a short amount of time. And Sean had some issues with bedwetting later in life, around his teens.
Serial killer.
Right? When he would have an accident, his uncle would make him go around in diapers. And he was, like, 12 or 13. But, like, I mean, I can understand, like, having, like, pull-ups. Just so you're not constantly, like, changing the bed.
But wait, was he doing it to humiliate him? Or was it actually to help him?
Yeah. So, if he wet the bed 2 nights in a row, the uncle would make him wear the soiled diaper on his head all day. So, I mean, you kind of have your answer there.
Yeah, fuck that man.
Right?
Hope he kills him. That was rude. That was rude.
So, I mean, violence was apparently very common. And, like I said, humiliation. So, his uncle would take him hunting and try to teach the young boy at the time how to kill animals in certain techniques. And in a really brutal way. I'm not going to go into it because it
is
disturbing and it's animals, so no. But I had the pleasure of reading everything that his uncle did. So,
yeah, thank you. Thank you for sparing us because I – no, no.
I took a hit for the team, so.
Yeah. I can listen to, like, people being murdered all day, but, like, animals, no.
No, no, not at all. No. So – total side note, the last, like, 2 weeks, I watched the entire Crikey, It's the Irwin series, start to finish, cried during the wedding. I was so invested, but, like, seeing animals hurt, like, it just upsets me to just be worse.
They're, like, so pure. It's, like, seriously? But
yeah, exactly. So, if Sean would refuse to participate with his uncle would call him pathetic and just totally, like, beat him down, saying that he's worthless, he wasn't a man. He was frequently called a wimp and chastised by his stepfather for refusing to take part in, like, these violent killings. Even if it's for, like, survival, like, you're hunting to eat the food that you hunt, like, it should be done in a humane way.
Yeah, there's no need to do that.
No, it's totally, what's the word I'm looking for? Unnecessary.
Oh, yeah.
And that, yeah. So, it wasn't until his parents moved to Colorado that the now teen felt happy for the first time.
But you know why he was happy? Because Colorado's amazing. But anyway.
Oh my gosh, full circle.
Right.
So, when they moved there, he was going to school and joined the... Oh, Perfect timing, Amtrak. Okay, so when they moved there, he was going to school and joined the Civil Air Patrol, and he had been studying emergency response training, which he would eventually graduate from the program with outstanding honors. Sean's mother and stepfather were excited to see him being passionate about something and applying himself towards these new interests, and they were proud that he was finally coming out of his shell. I mean, you moved him around 30 times before, what, 17? So Sean wasn't popular by any means at school. He had a few friends, but for the most part, he just really enjoyed learning. And many of the teachers said that Sean loved reading and always had his nose in a book. So in Colorado, it was just like day and night. Like, Sean seemed like a totally different person. He was finding himself and just really seemed to be doing well in school. Not long after moving to Colorado, his parents told him that they would be moving back to Oklahoma. So for obvious reasons, Sean was devastated by the news, and he finally found somewhere where he felt like he belonged. And he tried to convince his parents desperately to just let him stay, but Sean's parents knew there was no way that they could leave a 15-year-old alone in Colorado while they moved back to Oklahoma.
Wow, I'm surprised they knew that, because apparently they don't have a problem leaving them to go live their life before.
Right? But I guess the difference with that is, like, he was with family. I don't know if they had family in Colorado, but after they moved, Sean's attitude took a 180, and he was just angry all the time. Vonda had a temper of her own. She just seemed to take all of her frustrations out on Sean. He was often beaten for different reasons, hitting him across the face with a belt, and just straight up punching him in the face.
How? Okay, I know this is back in the day, but if you get punched in the face or hit in the face with a belt, how is there no mark when you go to school? And how is no one fucking saying this shit?
Right. I don't want to say that it was, like, normalized back then, but it was, I guess, normalized back then.
Like, it's not like, you know how they bend them over your knee and you, like, hit their butt. This is their fucking face. Like,
yeah, that's punching someone in the face. Level. Totally unnecessary. After this move, like, everything was just really building up in Sean. So while in school, Sean said that he received an underground magazine from some guy who was promoting the occult. And it was a handmade magazine filled with satanic metal bands. There was an interview and artwork from Richard Ramirez, or as we know, the Night Stalker. Cartoons.
Also, of different, fuck that man.
Right? Different serial killers in the magazine, and it just focused on mainly satanic killers. And Sean then said that he met someone who considered themselves a witch. I don't understand this part, but who taught him the ins and outs of black magic. He was just super interested and started to do all of this research on witchcraft, and he would go to the local library and find books on the topic. He just became obsessed with Satanism and witchcraft and all that jazz. At his future trial for murder, the jury would be left unaware of any of these details of his childhood. So just like a forewarning. Okay. I feel like this trial is going to piss you off. But when Sean was about 6 or 7, he said that he began to hear voices in his head, often criticizing him. At the time, he thought all people heard these voices. And for years, he displayed extremely paranoid behavior. He described how he would fix threads of doors and brush the nape of a rug in one direction before he would leave his bedroom in order to see if anyone had entered the room. He was subject to extreme mood swings, sometimes euphoric, and then other times suicidally depressed. He said that he went to his mom about it when these voices started to get really bad, and she was just like, okay.
Wow, thanks, Mom. Thanks for all your fucking help. Mom, right? I'm fucking here.
Right? So, as a teenager, like I said, he became obsessed with good and evil and God and Satan, and he increasingly turned to Satanism. And I know Satanism is like a practice, so this doesn't really... this doesn't pertain to Satanism as a whole. I'm not too educated in Satanism, but...
Well, I've, like, read their, like... I don't know. I'm just going to say the word commandments because I can't remember. But it's actually basically, like, be a fucking good person. Like, basically, like, stuff like that. So
yeah, so basically this isn't that.
Yeah.
He increasingly turned to Satanism, and by the time he was 15 or 16, Sean was practicing satanic rituals on a daily basis. So I don't know if it's necessarily Satanism or just witch, like black magic, like witchcraft, like that evil, evil shit.
Yeah.
Because nothing of this sounds like that.
Yeah.
But, he would store vials of his blood in the refrigerator, some of which he would drink, like, at school. Like, he had, like, a vial that he would wear around his neck. Yeah.
Ew.
On your face.
Hey, you guys can't see me. I'm, like, so fucking disgusted.
That can't be good for you, bud. But he would perform acts of self-mutilation, such as putting sharp objects into his scalp, which just makes me cringe. It makes me cringe. He became involved with drugs and taking amphetamines in order to stay awake and carry out his rituals. When asleep, he would dream of killing and mutilating people. At some point, he began to have dreams in which he would kill his parents.
Huh.
So,
I mean, can you blame him, though? Like, for, like, based off of his upbringing?
Right.
Well, I guess it was his uncle who made him do the diaper.
But, like, there were points where it's, like, during, like, a kid growing up getting beaten that often.
You're right.
That is when you cross from, I want to say, like, reprimanding a child to abusing a child. Yeah. And I feel like they all definitely played part into his development, like, mentally, for sure. So, then on the night of either the 4th or 5th of March, my birthday.
Yours and Tyler's birthday, wow.
So, I couldn't really find the specific date. But, 1986, reportedly after going without sleep for 3 days, taking speed and smoking marijuana, Sean fell asleep, woke up, took a gun, and shot his mother and stepfather as they slept in their bed.
Huh.
I'm going to rewind for a quick second. So on the 8th of September in 1985, 6 months before the killing of Vonda and Paul, a shop clerk named Robert Paul Bauer had been shot dead at the Circle K convenience store in Oklahoma City because Sean and his friend Richard couldn't get beer.
Wow.
So, I didn't really go into Richard a whole lot because, I mean, this is Sean's case, but Richard was a friend of Sean's at school, and Sean ended up telling him, like, I have these voices that are telling me to do these things, and Richard basically said, like, oh, you should embrace what they're saying, yada, 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 like, encouraging it, because I have these thoughts, too, and so, apparently, Robert wouldn't sell Richard the beer, so then automatically went to the top of Richard's, like, let's kill him list.
Mm.
And Sean fell through with it.
Yeah.
So,
it kind of reminds me of, like Klebold and what's his name from Columbine.
How yes.
They kind of like teamed up. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Sean Sellers was tried for all three murders in the absence of any forensic evidence linking him to either crime. The prosecutor's main evidence was provided by his best friend, Richard Howard, which is the Richard I was just talking about. So, who was with him at the time of Robert Bauer's murder, Howard was also initially charged with first-degree murder, but the state dismissed the charge and recommended that he'd be given a 5-year suspended sentence in exchange for testimony against his friend. So he did. Howard claimed that Sellers had said that he killed Robert Bauer because he, quote, wanted to see what it feels like to kill someone, end quote. Howard then testified that in the early hours of March 5th, 1986, Sean Sellers had come home from his house and told him that he had killed his parents.
Did the cops know that it was Sean that shot Robert? Because he killed him, right?
Yeah.
Well, why was he out to kill his parents? Because, right, him killing Robert was beforehand.
Yes. I don't know.
Because even if, I mean, because he's obviously a juvenile, he's still going to, they're definitely going to certify him for fucking murder. Like,
right.
Like, he should be fucking in jail.
Yeah. It kind of, like, went from he killed him and then he killed his parents. There wasn't, like, I don't know how that was all hashed out or how he was still home. Because that was, what, 5 months? Wait, let me scroll
September up. September to March.
6 months.
Yeah. Or maybe they just didn't know who did it until they found out, like, after.
I don't know. But if Richard was the way for them to find out that he killed the guy, you don't even know if that story is completely... How many trains have to go by while we're recording?
Yeah.
But if it's Richard... I keep wanting to say Robert, but Robert was the one that was shot. If Richard was the one that basically solidified that Sean shot him, then you don't really have the full story because, of course, Richard's going to be like, well, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know? He was just involved with the planning. So, a psychiatrist testified at the trial that Sean Sellers was incapable of forming the intent necessary to commit first-degree murder because he was either insane or, quote, legally unconscious at the time of all three killings.
Oh, because you mean, like, he was on these drugs and shit.
Right.
But drugs and stuff don't, like, you can't use that as an excuse. I mean, not that I know Oklahoma law, but I'm pretty sure that's kind of across the board. But anyway. Well,
so, just so you know, I'm about to go through a whole lot of trial.
Okay.
So I'll probably be covering any questions you have
within.
So hold your applause until the end. So to rebut this, the prosecution provided testimony from a psychologist who had briefly examined Sean to see if he would be kept in juvenile court, but had not tested the boy to determine his sanity at the time of the crimes. So was unable to rule out the possibility that the psychiatrist was correct in his assessment. So the trial jury was not instructed that Sean's age of 16 at the time, keep in mind he was 16 at the time of the crime, was a mitigating circumstance. Instead, the jurors were asked to decide whether his age was a mitigating factor. The judge did not allow the defense to introduce expert testimony that juveniles are developmentally different to adults. Everyone knows this, but he said on the grounds that all jurors would know this anyways.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I learned at the conference? That because when they were given their little presentation on juvenile stuff, that your brain develops, she said, from the back to the front. So your, like, temporal lobe, it, like, the one that helps you with decisions and everything, it's the last thing to develop, which is why juveniles, like, you're not, like, you make all the mistakes because it's not fully formed, which is fucking
weird. Because
you don't
think of the consequence. You don't think what it could do in the future. So, however, the prosecutor was allowed to develop the notion of Sean Sellers as an adult. Quote, he's only 17. At the time of the trial, he's 17. But when he picked up that .357, he became a man. And when he walked out and he blew Robert Paul Bauer away, when he picked up that .44 special, he became a man again.
So wait, just quick question. This trial was for the September killing and the parents.
Yes. He was tried for all three.
Gotcha.
So he walked in and blew Lee and Vonda Belfato into another world. He's acted like a man. He's going to have to stand up there like a man, end quote. So the judge didn't permit expert testimony that the length of a life sentence in Oklahoma meant at least 15 years in prison without parole. The defense had wished to counteract the recent local newspaper article suggesting that life imprisonment meant release in under half of that time. So the judge refused to give the jury the option of finding Sean Sellers guilty of first-degree manslaughter if they had doubts about his ability to form a requisite intent for murder. This left jurors two options: to find Sean Sellers guilty of first-degree murder or to acquit him. Having concluded that he was guilty and a continuing threat to society, on October 2nd of 1986, they decided that he should die. So the psychiatric findings since the trial, quoted in By Reason of Insanity by Phil Bocharach, Oklahoma Gazette, quote, I think this is just another one of his attempts to escape the death penalty. I guess we should have anticipated he'd come up with something like multiple personality thing, end quote. Prosecutor at Sean Sellers trial in 1986, speaking in 1983. I don't know what that means, but I copy and pasted that from my article, so I will fully admit that. So in March of 1987, Sellers was examined by Dr. Dorothy Lewis, a professor of psychiatry. She found him to be chronically psychotic, exhibiting symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia and other major mood disorders. She described how he was in poor touch with reality at times and was overwhelmed by fantasy. So in 1992, 6 years after the trial, three mental health professionals diagnosed Sean Sellers as having multiple personality disorder, or MPD, a condition in which altered personalities manifest themselves in the sufferer. In brief, the three doctors found that a quantitative, I'm going to try this, electroencephalogram test, that was not right, but I'm going to call it a QEEG, disclosed that Sean Sellers had brain damage as a result to a head injury suffered as a child.
Ding, ding, ding. There's our number two.
Right. The QEEG dramatically changed with each of Sean Sellers' altered states, indicating the presence of at least three alter personalities. And evoked potential test, or EPT, which relies upon biological signals from the body and cannot be falsified by the patient, confirmed the QEEG. So two of the doctors separately spoke to two of Sean Sellers' alter personalities, named Danny, who demonstrated that he was left-handed, even though Sellers was not, and, quote, the controller.
That's so crazy when you hear things like that.
Right?
Like, they weren't left-handed, but they're like, other personality was. And you're like, it's the brain is fucking nuts.
Insane. So Sean suffered from MPD at the time of the killings, one of the alter personalities, which is unlikely to have understood the difference between right and wrong, must have been in executive control of his body or person at those times. There was only limited awareness of MPD in the mental health community at the time of the trial, when tests for it have not been developed. MPD is a, quote, hidden disease, end quote, which generally takes a number of years to confirm, which makes sense.
Yeah.
So, another quote, although troubled by the extent of uncontroverted clinical evidence proving petitioner, is it petitioner?
Yeah, so petitioner, means Sean, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So, suffers from multiple personality disorder, and that the offenses were committed by an, quote, alter, end quote, personality, we are constrained to hold petitioner has failed to establish grounds for federal habeas corpus relief, end quote, said by the 10th Circuit Appeals Court in 1998. So, Sean's state of appeals were exhausted in 1995 when Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals ruled that his right to raise the claim of MPD had been waived because it could, and therefore should, have been raised at the time of the trial.
But if it wasn't developed at the time of the trial, how could they have, so you have to preserve it in the lower courts, like your other trials. And because if you don't, you waive it. You waive bringing it up again.
Right.
Because you want to make sure that you give the state courts the chance to work out the issue before you, move up with, habeas and stuff like that.
Right. But so, how does that work if you don't get diagnosed until years after?
That's what I don't know. Like, I don't know why that couldn't be, new evidence that you didn't have at time of the trial. Right. I don't know.
But it did not fall under the category of, quote, newly discovered, which could have allowed for a successful appeal.
But how?
Yeah, if he didn't know until later.
I don't know.
So this ruling apparently unsupported any... by any expert advice, contradicts an undisputed testimony that it was not possible to raise the MPD claim at Sean's trial because the clinical tests for discovering and confirming the presence of MPD had not yet been developed. The experts also provided evidence that it usually takes several years and several diagnoses to establish that a person suffers from MPD. So next, a federal district court noted, quote, the significant neurological and psychological evidence, end quote, that Sean suffers from MPD and brain damage. However, it ruled that the evidence, quote, does not amount to a truly persuasive demonstration of actual innocence, nor meet the extraordinarily high threshold of showing that a constitutional violation will occur if executed, end quote.
So, but if it wasn't actually his main personality, how? I don't understand.
This case gets me riled up. So the court explained that it rejected the newly discovered evidence because the expert opinions were based on examinations conducted 6 years after the crimes, and thus the reliability of the conclusions was, quote, diminished.
Because people didn't know what the fuck this thing was back then. What the fuck? I'm pissed off. This poor kid.
I know. So on February 4th, 1998, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit reviewed the evidence of MPD and acknowledged the, quote, significant evidence that the person facing death is not the person who committed the crime, end quote. The court admitted that if believed by a jury, this evidence of him potentially having an alter personality, quote, renders the person known as Sean Sellers as actually innocent, end quote. However, it said that as a federal habeas corpus court, it was restricted to ruling whether a sentence violates the Constitution. Rather than to correcting errors of fact, the court ruled that it could not act unless Sean's claim of innocence was so great that no reasonable juror could convict. It noted that although the psychiatric evidence was clear, strong, and supportive, it had not been cross-examined in a courtroom, and also make the jurors skeptical about MPD. The court said that it was therefore not able to conclude that not one juror would vote to convict, and it denied the appeal.
But I don't understand how one juror, because reasonable doubt, right. One juror, if they're like, yo, I think he has this disease, that, like, so I don't understand.
I don't either. But they were just like, nope, not gonna retry you. Sorry. It gets me super annoyed because, like, I feel like the big thing is throwing the MPD in the mix. It shows that he more than likely wasn't in control of himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that throws, like, this whole wrench. And I feel like, don't quote me on this for fact, but I feel like the system was just, like, I don't feel like figuring that shit out.
Yeah. And it was, like, back in the day, so they're like, is this real? Is this real science?
Right. Right. And, like you said, science wasn't super advanced back in whenever this happened, the late 80s. That also, when you throw mental health in there, like, they automatically take you as a joke.
Yeah.
Which I feel like in our generation, we're starting to really take mental health seriously.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me, but it also doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And, like, my whole thinking is, if this was if he was an adult, it would be sad. But the fact that he's also a child is just infuriating. Like, yeah.
That they don't give him a second look over, even. It just feels like they're like, no, you're guilty and you're a man because you picked up a gun.
Yeah. So, which, I mean, like, I agree. He should have been tried as an adult. But, like, this is, like, very mitigating. Like, this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If this was given to the jury, there's can definitely be reasonable doubt. You know, like,
I mean, I'll probably say this later, but, like, I don't think he deserves to die, but, like, yes, he needs to, like, be in jail.
Yeah. Or, like, I mean, they also didn't have this. Like, it was, like, jail or nothing, you know. But, like, right. He needs to be, like, in a hospital. He needs to get treatment.
Exactly. He needs to get help.
Yeah.
So the court stated that it was, quote, not unmoved by the petitioner's dilemma, end quote, and that it was, quote, not unconvinced that given an opportunity by a state court, he could not cast doubt on the propriety of the sentence he faces, end quote. November 30th of 1998, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear Sean's final appeal. Oklahoma's attorney general immediately asked the state court of criminal appeals to set an execution date, which it did.
Wow.
So,
fuck that AG.
Right? So, quote, when I was 15, I went to a drama production that Sean had written. Seeing the play made me realize I was headed in the wrong direction. I understand the severity of the horrible crime Sean committed, although at the time, he was only 16 years old. As adults, we are all different people than we were as teenagers. Also, Sean's life has not only changed my life, I have personally seen it touch hundreds of others. He is not just a man in prison who has no effect on others, but his life has purpose and meaning. Therefore, I'm asking you grant Sean Sellers clemency and spare his life, end quote. And this was from a letter to Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board from a 24-year-old Oklahoma resident on December 1st of 1998. So the international ban on the use of the death penalty against child offenders stems not from a desire to excuse the crimes committed by children, but out of recognition that young people are not fully yet mature, hence not fully responsible for their actions. There are much greater possibilities for their rehabilitation and eventually reintegration into society. So Sean spent his entire adult life on death row. For 7 years, he was incarcerated in the H unit, the maximum security unit built in Oklahoma State Penitentiary in McAllister. He was among the prisoners moved there when the unit opened in November of 1991. Amnesty International concluded that conditions for H unit's death row inmates, who were held effectively underground with windowless concrete cells, amount to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment in violation of international standards. So, like, this kid, like, he's been abused from day one to being in prison and abused.
Yeah.
So while the rest of the world has agreed via the Convention on the Rights of the Child that, quote, the best interests of the child, given that child the potential to return to society and provide treatment for children who come into contact with the law. U.S. officials have kept Sean in dehumanizing conditions for most of his adult life with a view to kill him.
Yeah.
So, like I said, sentenced with first-degree murder, and it was concluded that he was a continuing threat to society. So, again, in October of 1986, he was 17 and sentenced to death row. Did you have something you wanted to add?
No. I was just going to say that, because you said the best interest of the child, and I was going to say, if anyone is in family law or studying for the bar and has a family law question, when in doubt, put best interest of the child. That's the standard. Throw that in.
I love that.
It's like, they also say, when in doubt on any law school thing, write reasonably prudent person. If you don't know the standards, that's the standard.
So now I'm going to get into like prison life for Sean. So Sean was an exemplary prisoner on death row, and it was reported that no incidents appear on his disciplinary record. His friends made a website on his behalf campaigning for clemency while he was in. But in prison, he became very religious and converted to Christianity. And most of the time, well, I guess this included, it's like, well, they always find God in prison.
Yep.
So, and his, but like, he's different with it. So, he engaged himself in writing and artwork with a view of helping others learn from his experience. He made several videos which had been shown around the world and had done interviews with Oprah. How do you say this? Geraldo?
I don't know.
Geraldo documentaries for 48 hours and just a whole list of different interviews that he's done speaking about all of this, in which he talks about the dangers of cults, Satanism, and drugs. Again, I feel like he means black magic, witchcraft. Yeah. So several people he touched started writing him and have credited him with helping them deal with their own personal crises and turn their lives around. So, for example, a woman who was facing sexual abuse by her father began communicating with Sean by mail after seeing him on television, And she says that their long exchange of letters helped her through her crisis and that they remained strong friends. Soon after, Sean Sellers was sent to death row as a 17-year-old. He reportedly saved the life of another condemned prisoner, Henry Smith. So over a period of a few months, Henry had been repeatedly mocking, taunting, and threatening Sean. He would warn Sean that, quote, he was going to get him and that he should never drop his guard. So one day, Sean was placed on the exercise yard with four other inmates, and one of whom was Henry Smith. Two other inmates attacked Smith with knives, and Sean intervened, stepping in between Smith and his attackers and calling the guards. So when asked by Smith why he helped someone who had threatened him so badly, Sean replied that it was because Smith was a human being and therefore was entitled to live. And they became friends from that. So Henry Smith was no longer on death row, having his death sentence commuted to life imprisonment by the courts. So Sean's step-siblings refused to believe that his conversion was sincere. They thought it was him doing it so that he couldn't be executed. Prison officials obviously didn't believe that he had converted truly, except for one who was the prison chaplain. He believed that Sean was telling the truth and felt that he was a changed man. So,
and especially like when you hear about God in prison, most they're adults. This is a kid who is now finding God in prison and becoming an adult. So now he's making right decisions. Like,
right.
I feel like I believe that more than like it's an adult, you know.
Right. And I'm not exactly sure at what point he converted and when he started really doing this. But like you see prisoners that are like, oh, I found God. But they never do anything.
Yeah.
Like Sean is going out of his way to educate people, to help people, to be there for people. And just seemed like he genuinely cared.
Yeah.
So,
and obviously, still a disclaimer. Well, not really a disclaimer, but you know, it's don't kill people. We're super sad for the victims. It's a loss regardless. But
oh my gosh, it's horrific.
This is also a loss for him because I don't think he should be on death row. Anyway, go ahead.
I like I said, he should be in jail for what he did, but he doesn't deserve to die, especially as young as he was when he committed the crimes.
Yeah.
This is a very controversial case, and you can obviously see why just by hearing everything. So, So this kind of thing had people feeling confused because Sean was making his way around talking about how God saved his life, how he's a changed man, he's Christian, and he loves the Bible and whatnot. And the Christian community, some were standing behind him, pastors believed him, and they were all saying how they need to stand by their Christian brother. But then there were other Christians saying, well, like, he did kill three people, which...
Yeah.
I think they were rallying just so he wasn't executed.
Yeah.
Obviously still in prison, but, you know. So as Sean's execution date was getting closer, he was trying senselessly to get his case appealed. Even up to a couple days before his execution, he was begging for his case to be overturned and stopped. But all of Sean's appeals were denied. He sat on death row until February 4th, 1999, and at that point he was 29 years old. So Oklahoma had never executed a prisoner for a crime committed when they were under 18 years old. And his last meal his last meal was Chinese food. He got sweet and sour shrimp and got fried shrimp, and then he was on his way to get executed. So on February 5th, 1999, at 12:17 a.m., Sean died by lethal injection into both arms. 5 minutes before, during his last 5 minutes of life, it was said that Sean was singing Christian songs and prayer before saying, "Here I come, Father, I'm coming home." And then turned to the warden, Gary Gibson, and said, "Let's do it, Gary. Let's get it on." Sean Sellers is the first and still remains the only person executed in the United States for a crime committed under the age of 17 since reinstatement of the death penalty in 1976. Now, in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that it was unconstitutional to execute an individual for a crime committed under the age of 18.
What year was he executed again?
He was executed in 1999, February 5th.
Like, literally 6 years.
Yeah.
But so, also, I mean, I think they, at the conference, she said that you're not, like, fully developed until, like, at least 25. That means he had, like, 4 years after that, and then he was killed.
Right.
Like, no.
So, I just wanted to close this out with a quote from Sean Sellers himself, from the multiple personality disorder. I guess it's a, like, he wrote a book or something in 1998, and it said, quote, "Even if it's a different me, it's still me, isn't it? And if it's some other me who does something horrible and evil, isn't it an evil part of myself that I did? I want to take responsibility for it. I don't want to rationalize it in any way, but that's usually what it sounds like whenever I try to explain it," end quote.
Mm. So, but also, was he getting treatment while he was in prison?
It doesn't sound like it. I didn't see, like, anything that he was.
Did any of his other personalities come out ever again?
I have no. I didn't see anything, so
yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know if MPD is something that works itself out over time. I don't think so either, but yeah. I mean, he's still
honestly, no one probably documented it anyway because they were like, "Oh, he's on fucking death row. Who fucking cares?"
Right, exactly. And I mean, Lord knows he most likely wasn't getting treatment for it.
Yeah.
He was just diagnosed and they were like, "Well, cool.
Yep, your appeals are done. Sorry, bye."
Exactly.
Goodbye now.
Right. So that is the story of the youngest criminal executed for something he did when he was a juvenile.
Yeah. Wow, that's so fucking frustrating.
Right? Very frustrating. So that was my case. It's, I hope you liked it.
I mean, I fucking hated it, but like just his whole life, he was just like chewed up. Like, no, let me figure out what phrase I want.
He didn't have a chance.
Just like, yeah.
Who would have known like what he could have done if he stayed in Colorado?
Yeah.
It's sad. And I mean, like, not downplaying what he did, because what he did was horrific.
Yeah.
And he deserves to pay for it, but I don't think he deserved to pay with his life.
I think this is just like the Menendez brothers.
Yeah. Like, right? That one still upsets me. And I remember as soon as you started reading, I was like, "Oh, fuck these boys." And then I was like, "Oh."
I know. And I was like, "Oh, wait. But wait, there's more."
Yeah.
But no, that was so good. Oh, God.
Thanks.
Yeah. And, like, it's such, like, a good thing that, like, juveniles now, like, can't get life in prison unless it's, like, you know.
Yeah.
Extraordinary circumstances or whatever, but.
At least and, not like, like this.
Yeah.
Like, this will never happen again, and it sucks that Sean was the one that succumbed to it, but.
Yeah. At but least also,
they know better now.
If he actually found God and he actually had this multiple personality disorder, he's probably glad that he was able to help all these people, even though he suffered. He's probably like, "Oh, it happened to me for a reason. And, you know, so that I could help all these people." So, and I guess there's kind of a bright side.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a double edged sword, but.
Yeah. Hmm. That was great.
Thanks. I was excited when I because I was watching Bailey Sarian, as I do, like, every week.
Yeah.
And she started talking about this. I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." And then she didn't really cover, like, the trial and, like, the psychiatric findings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So when I was reading into it, I was like, Jaden's gonna love this.
Yeah. You know how I love me these controversial ones.
Because, like, well, also, like, you had all these questions, and then the answer was, like, in the next paragraph.
Yeah.
Which was super nice. I'd be like, I don't know, and then start reading. I'm like,
yeah. I know which one I'm doing for next week, and I'm so excited.
But I'm obviously so not gonna excited. Tell you. I like that we don't tell each other because...
I know.
It's so much exciting. More fun. Right? And also, I think this new, like, structure that we're going to be doing is easier because I know we always stress out about covering the same case.
Yeah.
Like, that's You're a big right. thing that we always stress out about. It's like... Yeah. Okay, so my case is this. And then it always ends up being like, oh, mine's the same. What year? And then
yeah.
it's like different. We're like, okay, we're good. So.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So, upper for this week.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the therapist, hash out a lot of shit. It was nice. Great. I felt 12,000 times lighter walking out of the place.
Good.
What else? What else did I do?
I know, I literally can't think of fucking anything.
Well, you but did, like, everything. You but were so funny busy. Things.
So today, it was, I was eating lunch at work with some of my friends, Rebecca, Ian, and Caitlin, and something came up, and I said, like, oh, yeah, something about the podcast. And Ian goes, wait, you have a podcast? Why didn't you tell us? And I was like, no,
dude, I don't.
And he was like, what's it called? I was like, nothing. And Rebecca was like, here. She like pulls up her phone and she's like,
yeah.
And I was like, no, it's called A Little Thing Called Murder. And he was like, well, why didn't you say something? And I was like, because Ian, you're gonna listen to it and yell at me and be like, wow, Jane, and this is all wrong. You're so dumb. And you know who he is, so you like that's me imitating his voice. He
I was also making saying that.
So for those that don't know, and I hope he listens to this and he hears this.
You're like, why call me out, bro?
Yeah. But no, so he always picks on me, right? And I always go, and so we were literally talking about that today, how I always do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I literally just did. The last five seconds literally didn't just make sense, but maybe you understood it, maybe not. I don't know.
I understood it. But I also yeah. know you. So.
Yeah. But yeah, so now they know, and I'm like, fuck. They're probably listening now, like anytime I share anything like legal or you ask me any question, I'm like, fuck, is this right? They're gonna listen to it and be like, Jane, you're a fucking idiot. And I know I am. It's fine.
We embrace trying. It. Did we ever say that we were 100% accurate? Ever?
Yeah. No.
Ever?
I'm sorry. I don't recall this podcast being called 100% factual.
Right? Maybe 100% wrong, but...
Yeah.
We see what we see, and we report on it. Isn't that, like, no different than the news today?
And sometimes I... kind of remember things in my field, you know.
Sometimes, yeah.
Lord,
I love that.
Again, quoting Hannah Montana, our Lord and Savior: "Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has mistakes."
Everybody.
That's my favorite thing to say. Like being like our Lord and Savior, and then like saying like Justin Bieber or like you know something.
Right, right.
Actual like Christians or whatever are probably like. That's fucking blasphemy, Jaden. Like, I fucking know.
Oops.
To whom it may concern, doesn't care.
Now, if we get something, like, horribly wrong, we'll address it the next episode.
Because
I think I said something last episode that I was like, Megan, why did you say that?
But, yeah, so I guess here's my good thing. So my cousin River that I was talking about, she's the 8-year-old. I just got a text because she was so sad, like, when I had to leave, because she thought I was moving out there. She's like, Jaden, I thought you were moving out to Colorado. I was like, River, I wish. No, I was, like, seriously so sad. Like, she's like, and I'm like, River, stop. I'm going to fucking cry now. But I was like, you can FaceTime me whenever you want. And her dad just, because obviously she doesn't have a phone, her dad just texted me and was like, hey, we're about to eat dinner. And then, because River's really excited to talk to you, if that's okay. And I obviously haven't responded yet because we're recording, but I'm going to be like, yes.
Oh, so, I love that for you. I know.
So when I get off, we're going to FaceTime. I love her so much.
Oh, I love that name, River.
I know, right? And she's so freaking adorable, too. Have you ever seen a picture of her?
Yes. Oh, well, you sent me, like, videos this past weekend. So, very cute, obviously, with a name like that.
I know, right?
She's going to be a heartbreaker.
Freaking smart. That's what I tell her all the time. Because I'm such a fucking feminist. And which also, feminists are regular people. You're fucking sexist if you're not. But anyway. So I'm all about, like, you only need yourself. You're great. You're fucking smart. Like, you're strong. You're everything. So literally, I say that all the time. Like, any birthday cards, I'm like, you're the smartest person I know. Like, you're so strong. Like, you're going to be amazing. So yeah.
That's I think it's very important. With small, like with young kids, especially girls, because you know how girls can be, that when they're growing and in that developmental stage, to like remind them that they're more than just their looks.
Yeah.
To always point out, you're so smart, you're so funny, instead of just like, you're so beautiful, like, you're so pretty, which those things are good to say too, but you don't want them to grow up thinking that's all they are.
Yeah. You know? Like, I always start with, oh, you're so smart. Oh, you're so pretty. Like, that's always, like, my follow-up. Yeah. You know, I always start with, like, cause that's the most important thing, you know?
You know, but there's, so, one thing that bothers me, I don't know if I'm going to get hate for saying this, but, like, I saw a clip that, like, in Congress, they were, like, a man and a woman.
Oh.
Like, that stuff, it's, like, a man doesn't even, that doesn't, what are you going to start saying? The a woman meant?
Yeah. And I also hate that, like, people who are actually fighting for fucking equality don't give a fuck about that. It's like everyone else is like, oh, now they're like trying to change amen to a woman. No one fucking gives a fuck about that.
No people one who actually really wants. Yeah. I don't know anyone who wants to.
It's literally like not gaslighting, but I can't think of the word where it's like, oh, look over here.
Focus unnecessary.
On this. Like, focus on this instead of, like, what actually needs to be changed. It's like, oh, right. Like, kind of, like...
They're missing the mark.
Like, looking... No, so, I mean, yes. But I'm trying to be, like, okay. Like, trying to direct your attention away from the actual things that need to be changed. Well, I'm not looking for a word. I'm just describing
Because
I can't think of it.
Yeah. No, like, I get what you're saying, yeah.
Instead of looking over here, I, like, what... people actually want to, like, to have changed and that actually need to be changed. They're like, oh, look at what they're trying to do. They're, like, trying to fucking, like, be little crybabies and change a man to a woman. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sense. Like, it's being overdramatic.
Yeah, so it's, like, belittling. It's, like, belittling, like, this because they're, like, that's not also not the word. But y'all fucking know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, just fucking...
It just rubs me the wrong way. It's, like, no.
And, then, and also, if you know the word I'm talking about, reach out to us, tweet at us, or whatever.
Or you'll text me, like, 2 minutes after we're done recording and be like, it's this word.
Yeah. And look at this perfect segue. If you know the word, you can email us at alittlethingcalledmurder@gmail.com.
Or find us on Instagram, alittlethingcalledmurder, Twitter, tweet at us. Even though we don't really use our Twitter.
I know. We need to pick it up.
ALTC murder. I'm in general super bad at Twitter. So I don't know why we made one. I don't know if you're any better on Twitter. I'm never on it. But
also, reach out to us on those three things if you want to run our Twitter.
Yeah. If you want to run our Twitter and maybe put up some tweets every once in a blue moon.
That just reminds me of in Schitt's Creek when they're like, oh, what's the thing called? They get it printed as, like, their advertisements. It's, like, tweet us on Facebook or Twitter us on Facebook or something. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But.
Rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts because we're obviously the best.
Obviously.
Clearly.
Clearly.
And I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. Well, sorry that this is a day late, but yeah. Oh well, not really sorry.
Yeah. What do they say?
Sorry, but not sorry.
Well, yeah, but it's fashionably late, and it's like save the best for last, but that doesn't apply. So never mind, never mind. Just go with fashionably late.
Okay. Yeah, we're fashionably late.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, you guys have a wonderful day. Hopefully it's not as stormy, even though it looks nice out now, but we're in a thunderstorm, severe thunderstorm watch.
Ooh. Another awesome thing. Tyler got an air conditioning finally. So now it's cool here.
There you go.
Yeah.
You guys have a wonderful day. We love you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And we will see you next week.
Yeah.
All right. Love you guys. Bye.
No.
Oh, shit. Okay, I'm cutting that all out.
No, don't leave that in.
No, I'm not leaving that in. Don't forget to trust your gut.
Because it's better to be fucking safe than fucking sorry.
We love you guys.
Bye.